Soviet-led forces invaded Czechoslovakia in August 1968 in response to the Prague Spring, a reform movement launched earlier that year by then freshly installed Communist Party chief Alexander Dubček. But how soon into Dubček's rule did Moscow become concerned about developments in Prague? And what, if any, steps did the Slovak-born leader take to appease the Russians? Those are just a couple of the questions I discussed with Kieran Williams, who's the author of The Prague Spring and Its Aftermath and teaches at Drake University in Iowa. When did the Prague Spring movement, in a sense, start getting away from Dubček and running out of his control, or the control of Dubček and the other leaders?
I would say probably the missed opportunity was fairly early. Dubček had a very relaxed time frame. He thought he could gradually roll out the reforms. They would release a big reform manifesto, and that would set the agenda. But that took longer than expected. In the meantime, they kind of let censorship end more by benign neglect rather than conscious decision. So once censorship was gone in, say, March of 1968, then they'd already, in effect, lost control of what was going to be talked about and discussed. So I would say by March, around March, they were starting to lose control of the direction of events.
I was reading that some historians believe Dubček maybe made a mistake when he didn't remove more conservative members of the Politburo and install in their place more progressives like himself. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
I think it was very difficult in the early months of 1968 to determine who was conservative and who was progressive. There actually was a fairly thorough clean out of the people who were associated with Dubček's predecessor, Antony Novotny. And then the people whom Dubček promoted to replace them, some of them turned out to then be the very men who in August would collaborate with the invasion. So Dubček perhaps was not always the best judge of whom he could trust, who he should ally with in forming a kind of reform coalition. So I think that was more problematic than the speed with which he tried to replace people.
And when did goings-on in Prague begin to cause consternation, at least in Moscow and other Eastern Bloc capitals?
Immediately. I think Czechoslovakia was already considered a difficult country before Dubček came to power for several years. I would actually date it back to the fall of Khrushchev in the Soviet Union in 1964, which the Czechoslovak side actually did not welcome. They'd been getting along very well with Khrushchev and were sad to see him go, and made it clear that he did not like how he'd been removed. So I think there'd already been friction between Prague and Moscow for 4 years. And the Soviet embassy in Prague was constantly feeding reports back to Moscow about difficult intellectuals causing trouble in Czechoslovakia well before 1968. So I think once Dubček came to power, there was already this sense of concern about where things were going to go. So very, very quickly, they already in March as well, in March of 68, you get the beginnings of the military planning for invasion is already underway.
When did Brezhnev explicitly make a threat toward the Czechoslovak leaders, saying, if you don't roll back the reforms, we're going to have to do something here?
Judging by the transcripts, he was dropping hints, I would guess, by May of 1968, in a way that should have been picked up by canny, seasoned Communist Party functionaries. They should know the code language. I would think certainly by May and definitely in July of 1968, I think there was very clear planning and signals that they were ready to take those steps if necessary.
Did Dubček then take any steps at all to appease Brezhnev?
Yes, he thought they had a deal when they met at the end of July 1968 on the border between Slovakia and Ukraine. He felt they'd reached an understanding that there were certain things Brezhnev expected Dubček to do, like regain control of the media, remove certain reformers who had displeased the Soviets, reform of the secret police. And Brezhnev thought he had an understanding that Dubček would take care of that. Dubček understood what was expected. But he thought, again, that he would have more time. He thought this is something that he could take his time in doing, whereas Brezhnev wanted results within a week. So they had completely different understandings of the time frame, and I think that's where the misunderstanding arose. But Dubček knew what was asked of him, and in theory, in principle, he pledged in private to do it.
And if we think about, for example, I don't know, June of 1968, what was Dubček hoping for at that point? I mean, what was his end game in that moment?
You mean in terms of what kind of reforms he wanted to see?
Yes,
what
he could actually achieve.
It's very fuzzy, and I think he himself hadn't worked it all out. They were kind of making it up as they went along. He definitely wanted the Communist Party to still have a political upper hand in the country. He didn't really want to have any genuine political competition yet. So the country would still be definitely run by the Communist Party, would tolerate the minor political parties that had already always existed. They would continue to exist. So then he wanted to liberalize and somewhat democratize the way in which the Communist Party functioned as an organization. They would have allowed more debate within the Communist Party, more formation of factions or platforms. So there would be some internal pluralism, but still within the Communist Party's framework. And on the economic side, again, it was still emerging, that they would allow enterprises more autonomy in making decisions about supply and demand and distribution and things like that. But it would still be a state-run economy with some market elements. And that was running into trouble in 1968. They had not really figured out how that was going to work. And the economy was actually not doing all that well. They would have had to make some very difficult decisions had it not been for the invasion.
And is there any sense in which Dubček kind of overestimated the value of the public support for the Prague Spring, that he thought he had a lot of the public on his side and therefore he could get away with maybe more than he actually could get away with?
He certainly understood, because they had a lot of opinion polling, that there was massive public support for the idea of the reforms and for liberalization. He didn't make as much use of that as he could have. I don't think he understood how to use that. He wasn't used to operating in that kind of environment. So he didn't really ever try to mobilize the public as a form of pressure on the Soviets. I think that was a very alien idea to him. The public self-mobilized at times, like before that meeting at the end of July on the Slovak-Ukraine border. The public definitely exerted its own form of pressure on Dubček not to capitulate and cave into Soviet pressure. But I don't think Dubček himself really knew how to use that public potential. That wasn't really how he was used to operating.
When did the invasion become completely inevitable? When did it become kind of a done deal, even before it actually happened?
I would say the 13th of August, Brezhnev and Dubček had one of their periodic telephone conversations. They would talk about every week at this point, again, because Brezhnev wanted to get confirmation from Dubček that he would take care of the things that the Soviets were worried about. And the conversation went terribly. It became extremely emotional. These were two men under enormous pressure on both sides, and they both really started to let that get into affect their judgment at this point. What was extremely important to this, the way in which politics was done at that time in the Soviet bloc, was that personal trust between the leaders was essential. Brezhnev in particular relied on trust in the leaders of the communist parties of other countries. And if that trust was lost, then Brezhnev would fear the worst. He would fear that that person could turn into another Tito in Yugoslavia or Ceausescu in Romania, someone who would be very difficult, a maverick, who would not be fully on board. And he was afraid that that's where Dubček was going. He was going to evolve into one of these other difficult characters within the socialist camp. So I would say that's when it's pretty much the fate is sealed on the 13th, so a week before the invasion, which is not that big a time frame. It shows that they already had the military planning worked out, and it really just took then a week to make it happen.
During that week, do we know if Dubček was bracing for some action, or was he still optimistic?
I think he was optimistic. There's no evidence that he had any inkling of an impending attack. He was certainly under the impression that he had time. They were planning for a party congress in early September. And I think he felt that the Soviets wouldn't do anything before that Congress.
You wrote the book, The Prague Spring and Its Aftermath, Czechoslovak Politics, 1968 to 1970. What was the main thing you learned in putting together that book about this particular period?
It was very surprising to me to sense that on the Soviet side, they seemed to have arrived very consensually on their side about the necessity of intervention. Unlike 1956 in Hungary, where it was more acrimonious, there was actually more disagreement on the Soviet side about whether to use force in Hungary in 56. In 68, the Soviet Politburo under Brezhnev was much more unified than I expected to find.
How do you think history should judge Alexander Dubček?
I think with a fair degree of understanding that he was a fundamentally decent man, very much like Mikhail Gorbachev in the Soviet Union later, you know, a fundamentally decent, principled, idealistic man who somehow had the political skills to get to the very top of his country, but then didn't have the political skills to stay on top, you know, to stay in power and anticipate where threats were going to come from. So I think it will have to be, to a certain extent, a critical evaluation of someone like Dubček, that he didn't have the political skills to manage the kind of situation that he was getting into. But on the other hand, everyone, I think, will be grateful that that situation happened at all. I mean, if you asked Czechs or Slovaks, do you wish 1968 had never happened? I think you'd get very mixed feelings, because there's a lot of fondness towards that brief period of opening and relaxation. But then at the same time, there's grief about how it ended and what followed, the normalization that followed it.
Did he make a similar mistake to Gorbachev in realizing too late, from his perspective, that people simply can't be satisfied with what you might call half freedom?
That's it. I think that's what it comes down to. He felt that because he was actually very popular, initially very popular, like Gorbachev was very popular initially, that people would be satisfied just to kind of leave things at that point, and underestimated that once you start to give people a bit more freedom, especially freedom of speech, that they will do things with that freedom that you were not expecting, and maybe you didn't want them to do. And that's when you start to lose control of the situation. So, yeah, I think it was a fundamental failure to grasp that people would want things to go probably farther than Dubček would have wanted.